The first weekend of NBA playoff action is over. I'm Brian Giberman, and I'm joined by HP's Chris Barnwell. It's the Podium Game Podcast. Chris, what's going on? Called you Barnwell. I called you Bill Barnwells. Whoops. Barnwell. It's Chris Barnwell, not Barnwell. That is my mistake. I apologize about that.
I get that sometimes. There's a very popular NFL writer who happens to have a similar name as mine, so I wouldn't be surprised if a lot of people read my name that way.
Yep, so my bad. I apologize about that. All right, but we're talking about the NBA. What was your favorite game of the weekend?
It's got to be either Miami-Boston or Detroit-Cleveland.
I thought Detroit-Cleveland was the best one.
I agree, because I know that Miami-Boston kind of had, like, it was a little closer, like, talent-wise, and everyone was like, well, when's Cleveland going to get it together? But I think everyone was just kind of underrating, like, how amazingly well Stan Van Gundy coached that team in Game 1.
And the other thing about it, I know their bench played well in the first half. I thought he stuck with it a little too long in the second half at the beginning of the fourth quarter.
I did too, but I think they were just so dead tired he had to make that risk, especially since, like, you know LeBron's coming in at the end and you're going to need all the energy you can to stop him.
Here's one adjustment I think Detroit can make. I think they need to have KCP shadow. You can't have Steve Blake, Reggie Bullock as your guards when Kyrie's out there with the second unit. If that's how, they need to have KCP shadow, or even, I think you have to do it with KCP, but if you have KCP shadow Kyrie Irving's minutes, that could be helpful to them.
Yeah, that might work, or just something to avoid having a Steve Blake, Reggie Bullock lineup out there for too long, because Steve Blake, to be honest, he's one of those guys we forget is in the NBA, and Bullock is... We're not even sure if he's that much of an NBA player.
Yeah, I mean, but when he hit a bunch of threes yesterday.
That was kind of funny. It was like, when Reggie Bullock's doing this to you, like, you know you're having just a bad game.
Yeah, Reggie Jackson only played 34 minutes. Going into before the series, I was thinking that I would push him, like, plus 40 and try and use my timeouts and give him... sub him at late in quarters when it's less time but more real life time and try and do some things, because with their backup point guard situation, it's hard, and I know he struggled at the end of the game, but it seems like they really need him out on the court pretty much the whole game.
Yeah, I wonder if it's just, I don't know if it's a trust thing or if it was a tired thing, or maybe it was just a composure thing, because we saw that late tech that he got, which was just completely unacceptable for him to lose his composure at that time, so maybe that's why some of his minutes were down, because, like, Van Gundy just couldn't trust him to be out there and not and keep calm at certain moments.
Van Gundy was funny about that after the game. I listened to his post-game press conference. It was a typical Van Gundy reaction. Jackson also, he really struggled down the stretch, but... to kill him for it, he got killed for it, and he didn't play well. He did over dribble, but I went and looked at his numbers in clutch situations during the season. The last 5 minutes, a header behind by 5 points. Jackson shot 42% from the field and 46% from three this season. So that is something he's done well pretty much the entire year. So it's kind of... I almost feel like it's a little bit unfair if we're that harsh on him about what he did there.
I didn't think he was over dribbling or more. I thought it was more that Cleveland was just forcing him to do that. I don't think he wanted the dribble as much as he was. It's just the lanes that he was looking for and, like, picks and pick and rolls that he was, like, trying to get going. He just couldn't do because Cleveland was just shutting it down.
He ended up with Love on switches a couple times, and
Those he failed to exploit. Like, that one shot clock violation late was just not good.
Yeah, and then there was other one. That was the one when he took the shot from the corner. There was another possession that stuck out to me when he was more on the wing. And did that end up in a shot clock violation? Did they have a late shot clock violation or something?
I can't remember that one. I only remember the one in the corner.
Yeah, but, all right. But speaking of Love, he played a good game. They exploited the Cavs had success with him at center in a smaller lineup. Kyrie, JR, Shump, LeBron, Love. They were a plus 8 in 13 minutes with Love at center, mixing in a couple other lineups they used in much smaller portions. I know it worked, and you can probably get away with it for this series, but even in this, I don't know if I love it. I just feel like it's repetitive.
You love it.
You like it?
No, you get it, the pun.
Oh, yeah. Oh, whoops. It's too early to think I would do something like that intentionally. That was not... Yeah. Whoops.
Sorry.
No, that was much... That needed to be pointed out. You were 100% right to do that. I would, if I was in your position, I would have done the same exact thing. I feel like Tristan Thompson brings too much to the table to be sitting him.
I agree. I did kind of like it for one thing. Morris was just eating them alive in the first half. And I think getting Low off of him and putting LeBron on him and then telling Drummond, all right, guard Love, we know you struggle on defense, so do this, was good for that short burst. But I agree. I think if you're going to go with a lineup, if you're going to go with a Love lineup, I think you'd rather play him next to Thompson and maybe give LeBron some rest. But obviously LeBron's not going to want to sit too long. So I think if you want to get Love and LeBron on the court at the same time, that's a good way to do it for a short period of time at least.
Yeah, I get it. And sitting Love is that's definitely a delicate situation that they
have.
Yeah,
you can't hurt his ego at any point during the playoffs.
Yeah, but Love is a better player than Tristan Thompson, but Thompson, just based on, especially if you're playing Kyrie, if you're playing LeBron, Thompson brings skills that better complement what you need on the court in most situations. I think
he's a far better defender than Love.
Yeah, and he's a better offensive rebounder. I mean, that's not ridiculous to say, right? Or do you think Love's up there with him in that?
It's so weird. Love would have been no contest better if it was Minnesota version of him, but with Cleveland, it's really hard to tell if he's still as good a rebounder as he was.
Yeah, I that's not really an insult to Love. It's more that Tristan Thompson might be the best offensive rebounder in the league.
Right. Like, I'm not saying that Love's not a good offensive rebounder. Just I feel like they don't ask him to do it much, so they might be on the same level. But yeah, I'll go for the sake of this discussion. I'll go with Thompson as the better offensive rebounder for now. All
right, you write for At the Hive. So let's swing this over to Heat Hornets. The Heat played some, and it was obvious right at the beginning. I mean, they were all up into the Hornets on
the
ball.
That was some of the best defense I've seen, like, from any team all season.
Yeah, I mean, it was smothering on and off the ball. What do you think the Hornets' adjustment is to that?
They have to figure out a way to guard the pick and roll. Like, that was where they failed the most, I think. Like, Hassan Whiteside and Luol Deng killed him. Now, Luol Deng's not going to go for 30 again. Like, I'm confident in saying that.
They probably don't shoot 9 of 18 from 3 again, too.
Right. But they were still getting these open looks from 3. And that actually happens a lot with the Hornets, because the way their defensive scheme works is they lack these true rim protectors, like a Hassan Whiteside. So what they do is, when the ball goes in, their perimeter players crash inside to help, and then when teams kick it out, those athletic perimeter guys, the Kemba Walkers, Batums, and the Michael Kidd-Gilchrist when he's healthy, they're expected to close out on those shooters quickly. It's a, like, they're kind of left on an island by themselves there. But Miami, when they would kick out, not only were they drilling all these shots, but they were beating the interior, like the help. So like Whiteside would get the ball on the pick and roll, and before anyone could come down and help, he already had his shot up and was making a layup. It was incredible the speed that they had. Like, that was just something I wasn't used to seeing from them, especially in all their matchups this season. Like, it usually took them a while to get these good shots up. And maybe that was an effect of how hot aggressively they were playing the pick and roll. Maybe it was just because they were catching guys like Al Jefferson off guard, but they were just exploiting Charlotte's lack of a rim protector to absolute perfection. It was incredible.
Dang and Whiteside were 20 of 24 from the field combined.
And I mean, Whiteside, like, he was that good. Like, I could see him doing that again, just because how easily he was exploiting them. Dang, he's been great, but he was making some absurd shots. Like, he had Marvin Williams in his jersey a couple times, and he still made the shots.
Well, what about offensively, though? Because they couldn't really get anything going against the aggressiveness of the Heat. Where do you think they have to go on that end to show improvement in Game 2?
They can't get ran off the line, for one. They had less than 23 point attempts, and they usually attempt at least that, well more above it. The pick and roll game, they'll try to figure out some areas to get some work there, because just Miami was blowing up everything they wanted to run. They were up against a really, I don't think they were expecting as physical a game as they got. One of the things that they struggled with was just, they would go, like, early in the game, they kind of got punched in the mouth. And they got really dazed. Like, you saw, like, how confused they looked. Like, they looked really vulnerable. And by the time they recovered, like, only Batum and Kemba were really getting anything going, which kind of gives me a feeling that Miami wanted to dare the rest of the role players to beat them. So, I'm trying to really figure out, because there were so many things that went wrong. I'm trying to figure out like the main thing that they would try to fix. I guess the main thing would be just get more 3-point shots up, and then try to figure out that pick and roll game. Try to figure out how to not let them blow it up so easily. Try to get guys open. Try to get Marvin Williams comfortable. Try to get lanes for Jeremy Lin, because Kemba Batum played fine. It was the rest of the guys that just fell flat on their face.
Yeah, Whiteside was, I know he was just good on, he played well. Early in the game, when they had that 41-22 second quarter, he really, I know Dang was hitting the threes, but Whiteside impacted a bunch of shots at the rim when the Hornets were able to get some dribble penetration.
Yeah, it was like, when they ran off the 3-point line, usually what would happen, like, as far as their scheme would go, is they would either A, drive towards the rim, or B, they'd drive in, then they'd kick out. But Whiteside would just come up and swallow them alive. Like, just absolutely engulf them, and, like, they had nothing to counter it. It was, like, I've been saying this a lot, but it was incredible. Miami just played the best game I've ever seen them play.
Yeah, well, hopefully for your Hornets, that doesn't happen again.
I really want a fun series. Like, the series should be really fun. I think Charlotte will be fine. I think they'll be fine. I think they'll adjust. They're a smart team. Steve Clifford's a smart coach. And I don't think Miami is going to play as well as they played again. I don't think they're going to dominate that way. But Miami definitely established themselves as the clear favorite.
A team that might not be fine in the East is the Boston Celtics. Now, they made a nice rally in the second half, and it's two reasonably evenly matched teams in the Hawks and the Celtics. I mean, they both finished with the same regular season record, but a game-changing injury happened. Avery Bradley hurt his hamstring. They said he heard a pop. He might not play for the rest of the series. And to me, the Celtics are a team that are built around, defensively, around what their guards do, especially in particular, Avery Bradley and Marcus Smart. And now with one of them down, that really changes the complexion of what that team is.
Yeah, Bradley is a huge loss for them, just in the sense that, remember that late game play where they swung the ball around and Evan Turner got an open three-point look and just missed?
Yes.
Like, that's a shot that should have gone to Bradley. And Bradley is currently this season a 36% three-point shooter.
And he's shot well, and it's not just a one-season thing. He's shot well from 3-4 of the 5 years in his career.
Yeah, like, he's a good three-point shooter. So seeing him, like, that would have been a shot that I think he would have taken. And he could have made it. Not to discredit the season Evan Turner's had. Like, no one really likes Evan Turner for some reason, but he's been playing well this season, and we need to acknowledge that. But you would much rather have Avery Bradley out there than Turner, because Turner's more of a sixth-man, seventh-man role for them, and he's going to have to step up with Bradley injured, and just, you never want to hear the words, well, we have to rely on Evan Turner.
Oh, and I mean, you had what was key. You could have one of Bradley and Smart to guard Teague, and then the other one you would use to chase Kyle Korver around. And now,
right,
and go ahead.
And, right, and Korver's not the automatic shooter that he used to be, but you'd still prefer to, like, not just be giving him these open looks.
No, and then now it pushes Turner and Isaiah Thomas to a more important level on the defensive end, where they're going to have to guard. It changes what Boston can do with some of their smaller lineups and who they have to play. I mean, even when Bradley was still healthy, they tried R.J. Hunter in this game for a couple minutes in the first half.
That was weird.
They couldn't make a shot. I kind of got it. Like, they were, I forget what the, I mean, they were 11 for 35 from three in this game. And in the first half, it was they were shooting like an incredibly terrible percentage. So I kind of understood giving something else a try. The Sullinger is a problem. It doesn't seem like he has much of a fit in this series.
Yeah, I'm just not sure. I mean, I guess you could try running more with Amir Johnson and Kelly Olynyk, but I feel like with Sullinger, they're just going to have to eat the minutes and, like, accept that Al Horford and Paul Millsap are going to make quick work of Sullinger, and just they're going to have to find ways to deal with that and accept the loss. Because I'm not really sure how they counter the fact that Sullinger doesn't seem to fit this series.
To use him off the bench and start Crowder, but that also, a big part of being able to do that was having Bradley healthy.
Right, because what Bradley does is he creates so much chaos on the defensive end. Like, and they're a team that loves that chaos. They love to get points in transition. They love to create turnovers. Just, and when you have a guy like Bradley who's so quick and athletic and just can poke at defenders, can go for steals and recover, and not ruin your defensive identity at the same time. Like, that's just so valuable. And when you lose a guy like that, just you can't take out a guy like Sullinger, play Crowder, and then be like, oh, well, we're gonna go small against a team that has two extremely good big men.
I think I would, though. I think I'd just have Crowder guard Millsap.
So do you think you just take the loss offensively, I mean defensively, and then try to make up for it on offense?
Yeah, and Crowder, I think's,
He's fine with Millsap, guarding Millsap. That's still, I think, going to be a loss for them on defense, theoretically.
Yeah, so you're looking at the lineup, and Stevens would have to really get funky with the subs, because basically all of his guard play would be in the starting lineup, and a lot of the bigs would be coming off the bench. But I would think Amir Johnson, Crowder, Thomas, Turner, and Smart is probably the best five they can throw out there in the series now.
Yeah, I was talking about this on another podcast, how, like, the Celtics are just, they're kind of full of glue guys. Like, the entire team is just glue people with Isaiah Thomas. And I'm starting to wonder if we're seeing, like, when they lose either one of the really important glue guys, like, how vulnerable this team really is. But I don't know. Every time I seem to doubt this team, they bounce back and just look incredible.
Yeah, I don't see that happening. I think Bradley and Crowder are quietly their two most important players outside of, I mean, you need Isaiah Thomas to boost up the offense a little bit, but when you take into account both ends of the court, those two guys are kind of the two that really help them the most at both ends.
It's their versatility just works so well for them.
All right, another the game that was right before that on Saturday, the Warriors mauled the Rockets, which it was kind of fun for a blowout.
See, I mean, it was, but I don't think it was, I think it was fun in the sense that every Warriors game is fun. It was fun to see like Houston just try to beat them up.
Yeah, and this is the thing about going after them like that. If you're going to go after Curry, like, you got to have some balls, because then you're going to have to deal with Draymond Green, who's a guy you don't want to fight. You have to deal with Bogut, he's another guy you don't want to fight. And Azili's a guy you don't want to fight. So, it's not just, oh, we're going to go after Curry, we're going to bash him. You're going to go after Curry, and then as Beverly found out, he got laid the hell out by Green right afterwards. So, there's repercussions to when you decide to go with that style of play against them.
Right. It's always funny when these old-timer players are like, why don't they just get physical with them and like start pushing them around? It's like, they don't realize this team, like, if you decide to get into a fist fight with them, if you decide to get into a slug-it-out match, they can throw as many punches as you can. Like, they can slow it down and get ugly. The thing is, they can slow it down and get ugly and still shoot threes. Like, just, that's what they do. And it was... I think if Houston's going to give themselves a chance, they're going to have to ugly it up and play that physical game. Just, it's still not going to matter, though, because they got guys that can easily handle them in a physical matchup.
The Rockets were locked in for, like, the first two or three defensive possessions of the game, and then just immediately went back to doing what the Rockets do. And they just
they
don't...
They get discouraged so easily. It's so frustrating.
Yeah, they don't have the defensive discipline to deal with this team. But the other thing to come out of that game was that Curry, we had another ankle issue for him. And it doesn't seem like it's anything overly serious. I think I would probably give him game two off and just see how they do. And game two is, that's tonight. We're taping this, it's Monday morning. That is, I'm 99% sure that's tonight. Let me double check. Yeah, it's the late TNT game. I'd give him tonight off.
I don't know if he rest players in the playoffs, but it certainly can't hurt.
What do you think? Okay, say Steph Curry couldn't play in this series at all. How many games would it take for Golden State to win the series?
Five. I think James Harden goes off once, at least once.
I was thinking without Steph, they'd win it in six.
I want to give Houston six. Houston, maybe it's just because of how disappointed I am in Houston. And I just don't know if they're. I don't even know if they could do that. Just I think they all hate each other and just want the season to be over. I'm not surprised they even made the playoffs.
Yeah, so was I. I think it would have been better off for everyone if the Jazz made it, but it is what it is. And watching Harden isn't the worst thing in the world.
Harden's fun. I've never been a huge. I haven't been a huge fan of Dwight ever since he torched the Orlando Magic and made me sad. But watching him just look so dejected on that team, just so frustrated. Like, we all like to question his maturity at times, but it's very clear that he's not happy on that team. And I feel kind of bad for him, honestly. Like, he just looks so unhappy there.
Yeah. Oh, so Kawhi Leonard won Defensive Player of the Year.
Oh, really? That just came out?
Yeah. I have no opinion on the matter, but...
I would have given it to Draymond Green, but I mean, the Spurs had the best defense in the NBA, so...
Yeah. Kawhi's a very good defender. That's
back to back years for him.
Yeah, I talked about this with Dubin on the last podcast because I watched so much Knicks and Suns, I didn't get to watch around the league as much as I usually do. So I'm just kind of sitting out awards.
I think that's kind of cool to see him win, even though I would have given it to Green, just because that's two straight years of perimeter guy won. And for a while, we were kind of ignoring perimeter defenders. Like, it was always the big men. So I think this can open up opportunity for some of the better perimeter defenders to be a little more recognized.
Avery Bradley, I hope, finished top three this year. That's the one thing I will chime in on with it. He's a dude who deserves some votes.
Yeah, I'd give it someone like Bradley. There's a couple in any other year I would have been on my horse yelling in KG's name, but he's been hurt, which makes me sad.
Yeah. Let's wrap this up. I think it was Mike Prado who had this tweet. The West favorites won by an average of 29 points. You think, jeez. How about, are we going to get four sweeps? Is that a thing that's possible?
No, the Blazers will win at least one. I think, I picked the Mavericks to send that series 7 against the Thunder because Rick Carlisle is a wizard. Like, he's a confirmed warlock.
That didn't go well in game one.
It didn't, but I don't know, maybe that's my way of punishing the Thunder for their inconsistencies in late-game situations this season. But I guess if they're killing the Mavericks so bad they don't need a late-game situation, that won't matter.
Yeah, that's. I think I picked the Thunder. I think I picked all three to sweep, and then I had the Blazers winning one. I still think the Blazers get a game, but that was the Clippers looked. I got to give them credit. They looked very good in that first in the opener last night.
I was so confused why everyone was like saying, "Oh, the Blazers could win this series, or it's going to go long." Like, Los Angeles is really good. And Portland, as good as they've been, they're still Damian Lillard, CJ McCollum, and a bunch of role players at best.
Yeah, the Clippers did a really good job. They really dictated where Portland was taking their shots. They did the leave for Al Farouq Aminu open, and we're going to live or die with him shooting threes. There was a team that did, the Celtics did that in the regular season, and he hit like 7 threes or 6 threes or something like that. And I know he shot decently from there during the regular season too, but that's something I think you live with in a playoff.
It's not Lillard and McCollum.
Yeah, you just live with it. And Paul and Redick ate the two of them up, and that's a pattern that also carried over from the regular season.
I know Doc Rivers isn't the most popular guy these days, but the defensive scheme he's had them run this year has been really effective for them. They've been great at defending three-pointers. They've, at times, just had a really great defense. I mean, there's some issues probably with Blake Griffin defensively right now, coming right back into it like so late into the season. But I don't think we're going to see problems with that until later rounds. I think he can hold his own against the likes of Noel Vonleh.
All right, the games tonight. Raptors, Pacers, Oklahoma City, Mavs, Golden State, Houston. Raptors, Pacers, 1-1, or does Indiana go home 2-0?
The Raptors have to win. I'm angry that I trusted this team. They lost game one, and I'm so mad at them for it. Like, they have to win. They have to win game two. I'm picking them to win game two because I think they're a really good team. If they lose game two, they should just forfeit the rest of the series and trade everyone and fire everybody.
I was about to say, if they lose this series, that's probably the end of Casey there.
That's the end of Casey. That might be the end of Lowry. They might let DeRozan walk. Just, you can't lose the first round 3 years in a row when you have the higher seed.
Yeah, and the one thing, it's with DeRozan, and he's gotten better this year, but he was bad in the playoffs last year offensively. 2 years ago, and as he got ate up by Paul George, it kind of reminded me and made me think back to when they played the Nets in that 7-game series, that he couldn't guard Joe Johnson, that Joe Johnson killed him. He struggled with his size, and there was nothing he could do. And this, you wonder if this is going to be a repeat of that.
That was what was really concerning about that game, and what could be concerning about that series is the series itself. Like, there was the Hornets game, there was the Hornets Heat game, and there was the Cavs Pistons game, and the Hornets got blown the heck out of there. The Cavs looked really struggled for a long time against the Pistons, but neither of those games do you feel like, uh-oh, this could be a problem for the rest of the series. Like, you expect both teams to bounce back. Toronto loses game one, and Paul George just goes nuts, and immediately everyone's like, oh no, this could be a major problem. Like, and not just because it's Toronto, but because how in the world are they going to stop Paul George?
If they had a if Damari Carroll could handle more minutes, that's one thing. I think asking Norman Powell to guard him is asking a lot out of a rookie.
Asking a rookie to guard a fringe superstar player, yeah, that's a lot.
All right, Thunder Mavs. I think you're. I'm guessing you're backing off your 7-game prediction.
You think the Thunder
go up 2-0, and then Warriors 2-0 with or without Curry?
Yeah, I think they'll win at least the home game. Even if Curry rests, I think they'll win it.
Yeah, I'm on the same page. All right, so we're going to try and do this every morning with a rotating panel of hosts. But, Chris, thank you very much. Are you got anything you want to plug and get out there?
Got some cool stuff up at the Hive right now about the playoffs going on, so everyone should check that out.
All right, go do that at thehive.com. Chris Barnwall and many other great writers over there. And that is it for this edition of the Podium Game Podcast.